This is The Mountain Life. I'm Lynn Ware Peak, here with Tim Henney. Our next guest is Pulitzer Prize winner Matt Richtel. Richtel tells the story in his new book, An Elegant Defense, about how the immune system impacts every aspect of our lives, including sleep, mood, fitness, nutrition, brain function, and aging, and is the ultimate key to wellness and longevity. Yet it is widely misunderstood. Through science and storytelling, Richtel describes the remarkable discovery of the immune system over the last 70 years and explains it in vivid detail, how this complex system works, how we interact with it, and the risks we inflict on ourselves when we meddle with its natural balance. We're happy to be joined by Matt Richtel. Welcome to The Mountain Life.
Oh, thank you for having me.
So you tell this story, this very well-researched story, in A Tale of Four Lives. There's Jason, there's Bob, there's Meredith, and Linda. So we have a couple of autoimmune diseases. We've got HIV, and we have cancer. And in amongst telling these stories, you tell the story of the immune system. You were inspired, I believe, by Jason, who was your friend and who was knocking on death's door with stage 4 Hodgkin's lymphoma.
Yeah. You know, you want to talk about a Lazarus story, practically biblical, depending on your worldview. So here's Jason. This is what launched this 3-year-long kind of journey. Is that I had this friend named Jason. We grew up in Colorado. He was Mr. Everything, all state baseball, state basketball, great looking guy, got all the girls. And then about a few years ago, now we're in our 40s, he got Hodgkin's lymphoma. It's a cancer of the blood, and it's supposed to be curable. You know, supposed to be. It's got one of those percentages you'd rather have if you have to have cancer for survival. But he didn't survive. He got 4 years or 3 or 4 years of chemo and radiation, and in the end, he had 15 pounds of lymphoma doubling every few weeks in his back, and his oncologist in Denver tearfully said, I love you, man, but it's time to go home and die. Went into hospice, last second takes this immunotherapy drug that is off-label, not yet marketed for what he has. A few weeks later, his girlfriend wakes him up and says, Jason, get out of bed. Your tumors are gone.
Whoa.
That's the sound of my head exploding.
No kidding.
And as his buddy and a New York Times reporter, I said, okay, I want to, what just happened? I mean, this is like nothing I'd ever heard of. Now, lots of people have written about immunotherapy, so I decided to go a little bit deeper and try to understand, well, what is the immune system in the first place? What is this thing we've begun to tinker with? And it led me both to Jason's story and then to three other very personal stories to try to illuminate the emotional and personal and intimate side of the deep science that accompanies it in the book.
Wow. Okay, I have a dumb question, and it's not even a smart, dumb question.
I don't buy it.
But it was something about the way you wrote it in the book. And, you know, it's strange. And in fact, my own son has had Hodgkin's lymphoma and he's thriving and he's great.
I'm glad he's okay.
Yeah, thank you. But one of the things that people always, well, some people would say, and you'd say, how did you just ask that question? And it's a question I'm about to ask. They say, how did he get that? But you write this thing in the book where you say, you talk about how Jason, he's a salesman, he travels a lot in his van and he lays his head down by the gas can. And
yeah.
I wondered why you wrote that.
Well, I believe that so this is a question that goes really to the basics of writing and storytelling for me, even beyond that would be generic and general. And I actually think it's a great question because I'm interested in writing. Less so about the immune system per se, but I think that for writing to be entertaining and interesting, it must be as real and not cliched as possible. It must be as true to the individual as it can be. And Jason was a genuine character. I write at the book, and this is even a bit cliched, but at the beginning, you know, he was never happier than when he was driving his cruddy old car across the country on one of his sales Jags with some chewing tobacco in his lip, listening to a new radio station, or randomly going to a high school basketball game that he heard about on the radio. And for me, as a writer, and as a reader, I don't believe I'm entitled to anyone's attention. I think I have to earn it through really true storytelling. And the way that the book has credibility is through detail. And so that is why I try to make things as real and accessible as possible. Now, why the gas can? Because Jason, Lord forgive me on public radio, and I'm agnostic for saying this explicit word, he was oftentimes a jackass, a lovable jackass. But here's a guy with cancer, and he'd fall asleep with a gas can next to his head. So I wanted to communicate to the reader that this is not just a generic person, but a real person experiencing real things who has a certain kind of worldview.
Matt,
does that answer the question?
Yes, it does. Okay. And the question was, what did you feel like there was a correlation between his getting the cancer and breathing gas fumes all the time? They seem fairly carcinogenic.
I see. That from that standpoint. Well, I definitely wanted to communicate this was a guy who didn't take great care of himself.
Okay.
But
okay.
I don't think you could make the connection per se between that. But look, his family did smoke, and that's a detail that I brought in as well. So I just wanted to evoke a human being who was just a regular guy, like many of us are regular people, and risks come with living life.
Matt, I'm curious about kind of the immune system as a system, and you talk a lot about, you know, kids. It's okay to let kids eat dirt because the concept is that it builds a healthy immune system. And we've heard about this for years. And I grew up, you know, in a place where you ate dirt and you did all those things. And I was exposed to every germ conceivable just through my activities and my life. You know, there was no intention behind it. It's just the way kids grew up back then. And over the last 50 years, maybe there have been changes, societal changes, cultural changes that have had an impact on the system itself and made it less robust.
Yep.
At the same time, like Jason, there are these immunotherapies which are, they don't build a more robust system, but they have found a way to come in and supplement and boost the system when needed. There's an interesting aspect to that. One is build a healthy system and you have less problems. The other is when you have problems, here's how you get in there and treat these things. What are your thoughts on that and sort of the connection between those two?
Yeah. So, I mean, you've asked a mouthful. Let me break it down by maybe just explaining the invisible world we live in that will help, I think, illuminate what the job of the immune system is and how a mismatch has been created in some ways between our immune system and our environment. Can I step back and go kind of big picture for a second?
Yeah, I'd love to hear that big picture.
Okay, so remember the movie The Matrix?
Oh, yeah.
All right, so remember there was ones and zeros everywhere. It was unseen to most people, and then it became clear that there was all these digits around us, and we were surrounded by computer code. Well, analogously, the first kind of principle I think about when I think about the immune system and the environment it thrives in or must thrive in is that all around us are bacteria, virus, parasite. If you look on the desks you're sitting at, the microphone you're using, if you look on your skin and certainly inside your body, but for every listener, all around them are proverbial ones and zeros of microbes. It is crucial to understand that most of these would do you no harm. They are cohabitating with us on this earth, and we evolved in their company. Why is this so important? Well, our defense network this thing that is zealously guarding us is not so much a war machine that would do battle with every alien organism. Were that the case, it would be scorched earth. We would be in nuclear winter trying to destroy everything around us. So the first basic principle I want to illustrate here when it comes to the immune system and to get at those questions you're asking is, rather than being a war machine, I tend to think of our immune system, this extraordinary network that works at the subconscious level round the clock, is basically a peace machine, or rather, I think of it as the love child of a bouncer and a ballet dancer. It is attempting to defend us with the bouncer side when necessary, capable of tremendous violence, but it wants to tread lightly such that when it does attack, it does as little collateral damage to us and the rest of the world as possible. Does that conception make sense?
Yes, it does.
So,
especially the bouncer in the ballet. I have that in my mind now. I'm going to have to do some work to get that out, but thanks for planting that there.
I think that could be a beautiful love affair for the screen. It's a totally different thing. I don't know. An immune system cell is born with music.
Yeah. Lady Gaga. Yeah. You're on to something.
Well, I'm a big idea guy. So you have this system, and hence an elegant defense. This is a fiercely elegant system. Fierce when necessary, elegant much of the time. But here's the thing about that system. It is so finely tuned, so carefully calibrated to not over damage the world around us and yet be determined and brutal when necessary, that it can be thrown off, I don't want to say with ease, but relatively easily. And that is no surprise. Think about the balance that must be struck. Every time we come across an organism, the body must make a decision. Attack, seek harmony, attack lightly, attack more aggressively. Autoimmune disorders. So this is when the body attacks itself, or the immune system becomes inflamed even in the absence of a pathogen. It's actually not that hard to see why that might happen. This is a very, very tightly tuned network. I would say over the years, over the decades, over the centuries, this has been one of the most vexing parts of human health, because women in particular, but men and women alike, would be told, we don't see anything wrong with you. There's no flu. There's no bacteria. There's no virus. We know you're telling us you're fatigued, you're feverish, you are wiped out, you have joint pain, but we don't see anything wrong with you. And how many times have you heard the phrase, maybe it's all in your head?
Oh, yeah.
So the two women in this book who have autoimmune disorders, they exemplify this kind of the invisible sufferers of this thing. And I feel for them terribly.
Absolutely. Well, as you say, in your metaphor of war and bouncers and ballet dancers, you call the immune system also, when it's not operating correctly, an out-of-control police state. And yeah. What I didn't know, and now that I think about the time, you know, the numbers of times that people have told me they have an autoimmune disease, like rheumatoid arthritis, lupus, MS, Crohn's disease, a lot of times it is a woman, and you give the statistic, 75% of Americans with autoimmune disorders are women. So yeah. What's that about?
Well, fascinating to me, and when I understand why, no surprise. First, let me just say to all the sufferers of this, I really feel for you. It's you have been the invisible women, and just because it's invisible, meaning there's no pathogen, doesn't make it any less real. Why women? Well, we don't fully know, but there are some pretty the theories that I've heard from the top immunologists mentioned and rheumatologists in this book make a lot of sense to me. Women confer immunity to children through childbirth, through gestation. In an evolutionary biological sense, they've been caregivers. There's more immune genetics associated with the X chromosome, the female chromosome. What this adds up to is it appears that women have a stronger immune system than men. Now, there's a big bonus side to this, and you two can fight it out after we get off about how superior women are, but they live longer. They have a stronger immune system, but at the expense of maybe having this system get more out of control. Mm-hmm. There's another thing that women might have more fatty tissue on their body, which could mean more immune cells. All of these add up to, again, you may live longer, but it comes at the expense of some of these extremely debilitating illnesses. And I can realize that for the women suffering of this, and men alike, that's a pretty tough trade-off because of the discomfort that can be involved.
Matt, I recently saw, I think it could have been on 60 Minutes, but I'm not sure. I believe I saw something, maybe I heard it, where they are figuring out how to deliver cures or immunotherapy through the HIV virus. They're using AIDS to deliver to cells and to specific locations immunotherapy in a way that, you know, is astounding. And it was like a very recent discovery and development. And you talk a lot about immunotherapies. What do you see happening on that front that excites you and gives you hope for the topics that you're addressing in your book?
Without knowing a ton about that specific therapy, it excites me. And I'll tell you what it represents, and again, quick step back about what immunotherapy is. So as I learned about this, one of the big picture things that I took away from this book was that 70 years ago, we knew very little about the immune system, and immunology was a backwater of science. My wife, even who was in medical school, you know, about 15, 20 years ago, didn't even learn that much. There just wasn't that much to say. But what has happened, and it'll go to the answer to your question, is that we have begun, through huge advances in technology and a lot of extraordinary basic science built on shoulders and shoulders and shoulders, is we've learned to tinker at the molecular level with the immune system. In the case of immunotherapy, here applicable to cancer and autoimmune disorders, is we are learning to put the brakes on the immune system when it is overzealous, and to take the brakes off when it is stymied. In the case of Jason, whose story we discussed at the beginning, his immune system was essentially sitting inert in the face of a cancer that had survived 4 years of brutal chemo and radiation. But once unleashed, the immune system attacked that cancer in days the way no other treatment had. What is happening now, to answer your question, is that we are getting more and more refined versions of that treatment, and we need that. Because if we don't refine the treatment, what winds up happening when you pull the brakes off the immune system is you may attack the cancer, but you may also create massive, massive problems of an overzealous immune system. There's a nasty word for this called cytokine storm, and it can kill you. And I get into some of the language of that book, but the essence of it is your body is destroyed by overinflammation. By contrast, if you have an autoimmune disorder and we put the brakes on your immune system through these through these drugs that are selling for collectively for billions of dollars, like Humira, you can also make yourself susceptible to infection. So what we need, to answer your question, is these more refined treatments like the one you're describing, so we can mimic the delicate, elegant defense of the immune system rather than behave as a hammer inside the body.
Wow, that's a great explanation. You know, a bit ago you mentioned, when you were speaking about immunotherapies, you mentioned the off-label drugs. And I wasn't familiar with that term until recently. A friend of mine went to off-label, and his lifespan has been lengthened by eons, right? What is off-label?
Well, essentially, we're seeing so much experimentation, and it's happening rather quickly. And there are times when a drug will be developed for one specific disease. I was just trying to be as general as possible, but might have applicability to other diseases. And doctors are saying, well, look, we are in a dire circumstance. Let us try this thing in the hopes that it has applicability to you. And there are mechanisms by which doctors, through, you know, work with insurance companies, through work with the companies themselves, can get access to these drugs. And there's some kind of discussion or negotiation that happens. It's a really interesting question more broadly that I realized, which is, in the course of doing this book, that so much discovery has happened on the precipice of life and death. And that is because there are eyes wide open conversations happening between a clinician, a doctor, and a patient saying, we're out of options. And these become effectively experiments. I mean, the desperation to survive leads people to take chances that sometimes serve science and oftentimes end with no positive effect whatsoever. But that's the kind of broad context for what your friend went through, and I'm so happy to hear it worked out well.
Yes, me too. If I could remember the name of the drug, I would present it to you, but it's crazy what he has done. But hey, since you brought up, and Tim brought up, the topic of HIV participating in some sorts of immunotherapies, can you just go into the story about Bob a little bit? Because there are people who have existed with HIV with no outright symptoms. He did for about 40 years.
Yeah. He's a remarkable story. So Bob Hoff gets HIV the night of Halloween 1977. And, you know, after kind of briefly getting, I mean, you know, kind of flu-like symptoms, he gets off scot-free. I mean, he never has AIDS. He lives a full life without drugs. You would look at him and say, well, he's a miracle. Because at that time, I don't even want to guess, he probably buried hundreds of friends. Yeah. He was in the middle of a period of time when that was a literal and proverbial coming out party for gay men in America, and they paid the price of dying in droves.
Yes.
And so the NIH began to look at him and say, well, what is it about this guy? And what is it about this guy is both, there are both a number of things that make this guy particular, and then there are some things we just still don't understand. There are some genetics that he has that he shares in common with some other people who have his miraculous condition's not the right word, immune system. They are called elite controllers. In an elite fashion, they control HIV. They seem to react to the HIV in the first instance in such a way as to, it's called the prime, that they prime their immune system to attack. What makes this so interesting is that in the end, it looks like people who die of HIV or who develop AIDS, their immune system makes an interesting decision that Bob Hoff's immune system doesn't have to make. Essentially, at some point, they say, well, this virus appears to be embedding itself in us in such a way that we can't kill it off without destroying the whole body. So we're going to kind of stand down. Mm-hmm. And we will take the trade-off of living another 5 or 10 years rather than try to fight this thing that would lead to scorched earth and nuclear winter. And Bob's immune system says, I got this, and it does. So his story takes up some chapters in the book, and it's endlessly fascinating.
As is your book, Matt. It's wonderful.
Oh, that's just the coffee talking.
And we could talk to you for hours, but we have to go live in about 2 minutes, so we're going to hop off. The book is An Elegant Defense, The Extraordinary New Science of the Immune System, A Tale in Four Lives. Our guest is Pulitzer Prize winner Matt Richtel. Thank you so much for joining us, Matt. I think we need to have you back sometime.
I'm so grateful, you guys. And to the listeners, please visit an independent bookstore.
Absolutely. Like Dolly's on Main Street in Park
City. Yes, that one.
Okay. Thanks, Matt.
Bye, guys.
Bye-bye.